Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Rachel Funes, attorney regulation number 41716, and I represent Mr. Nunn. I'd like to focus my argument today on issue one in the opening brief, whether the court erred in allowing the doctor to testify about his medical conclusions without disclosure of the underlying medical records. If you have any questions about the facts of the case or the other issues in the opening brief, I'd be happy to address those as well. I plan to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal argument. Mr. Nutter's basic due process rights to present a defense and to cross-examine the witness in a meaningful way were violated when the court allowed the admission of the doctor's testimony without discovery of the underlying medical records, which would have allowed Mr. Nutter to challenge that testimony. Because the doctor's testimony was the only evidence of a serious bodily injury in this case, which is an essential element of the second-degree assault charge and the crime of violence sentence enhancer, and because it was critical to the jury's determination on the menacing count, reversal is required on all three counts. Medical records are generally privileged. However, in a domestic violence case, the medical privilege protects only the victim's statements to her doctor. It does not apply to the physician's examination and observations of the patient's inmates. In Covington, the Colorado Supreme Court held that photographs taken by a physician's assistant of a victim's injuries in a domestic violence case were not privileged and fell under the statutory exception to the medical privilege, and therefore were admissible in a domestic violence case. Here, likewise, the medical records, which included memorializations of the doctor's observations and physical examination, and pictures in the form of CAT scans of the victim's injuries, were not privileged and were admissible, and therefore were subject to the rules, the mandatory discovery rules in Rule 16. The state is required to disclose any reports or statements of experts, including results of physical exams and scientific tests, at least 35 days prior to trial. The purpose of this rule is to ensure a fair trial and to ensure that the defendant has an opportunity to prepare a defense. And this is particularly important with expert witnesses because the defense cannot properly challenge an expert's testimony without having an independent expert evaluate the underlying basis and the data that form the basis of the expert's conclusions. The state's failure to obtain and discover the medical records in this case was a discovery violation. When the state violates Rule 16, the court must fashion a remedy that will restore as nearly as possible a level playing field for both sides. The court in this case abused its discretion because it failed to provide any remedy at all, and instead required Mr. Nutter to proceed to trial without any disclosure of the underlying medical records. This left Mr. Nutter with no opportunity to challenge the doctor's conclusions. It violated his rights to due process, to present a defense, and to cross-examine a doctor in a meaningful way. This was not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, because there is a reasonable probability that Mr. Nutter could have been prejudiced by this error. I'd like to refer here to People's Exhibit 13, which was admitted at trial. And this is a picture of the alleged victim that was taken pretty close in time to the incident, immediately after the incident, when the police arrived at the hotel. The doctor in this case testified that the alleged victim suffered a fracture to the bone immediately under her left eye. And this was the only injury that was alleged to constitute a serious bodily injury in this case. The doctor's testimony was the only injury, the only evidence of the serious bodily injury. The victim's testimony did not indicate that she had suffered any kind of fracture. In fact, she testified that when she went to the hospital, the doctors told her her injuries were, quote, nothing to worry about, and they sent her home.
Ms. Funes?
Yes.
Assuming that these photographs were available to counsel at trial, couldn't counsel have used these photographs to effect a fairly good cross-examination of the doctor simply on the basis of appearances, the doctor's testimony that there was a fracture, and the obviousness of no exterior injury, suggesting that perhaps the fracture was caused at some other time?
Well, defense counsel, in fact, did argue that that perhaps the injury was older or caused at some other time. And I believe defense counsel argued on the basis of the bruising on the right eye that the bruise would have been older because it was already turning so blue. I can't remember whether the defense counsel specifically argued that there were no bruises under the left eye. I'd have to go back and check the record on that. But in any event, this doesn't cure the error. I mean, the fact that there are pictures obviously is good for defense counsel, but it doesn't cure the error.
No, I understand that. My question really goes to prejudice.
Sure. Well, I think the prejudice is still inherent in this, in the fact that the doctor's testimony is obviously the best testimony of the serious bodily injury, and the jury could have believed that, you know, you can't see a fracture from the outside, and obviously the jury is not going to second guess a doctor's opinion when a medical expert is getting up there and saying that the victim suffered a fracture to her eye as a result of her trauma in this case. And we had no way to challenge that testimony or have another expert evaluate the evidence to see whether the fracture might have been older and possibly attributable to someone other than Mr. Nutter. There was also, as I was saying, some other evidence that this serious bodily injury could have been older. The alleged victim did testify that she was having an affair with Mr. Nutter, and she had told the police that she was afraid her husband would find out that she was in the hotel with Mr. Nutter. She also testified that her husband was, quote, the abusive one. And as we were talking about, the location of the fracture is inconsistent with the visible injuries at the time of the incident, which were to her right eye. And here in People's Exhibit 15, it shows the injury to her chin, which is a small cut on her chin. And you can also see the left eye, which doesn't show any signs of bruising at the time of the incident.
Ms. Fenez, excuse me, I want to talk about the felony menacing. If we exclude, let's just take the doctor's testimony out altogether, isn't there still enough evidence in the record to support conviction of that charge?
Your Honor, I believe that this error also invalidates the felony menacing conviction. And hang on just a second. I want to look up the elements here. So menacing requires proof that the defendant knowingly placed or attempted to place the alleged victim in fear of imminent serious bodily injury. And I do believe that the extent of her actual injuries is highly relevant to the jury's determination as to whether the defendant knowingly placed or attempted to place the victim in fear of a serious bodily injury, because if all of her actual injuries are rather minor, the jury might not have found that the defendant knowingly placed her in fear of serious bodily injury. And in addition, because this is a felony menacing count, it required proof that that Mr. Nutter's fist was a deadly weapon. And a fist is not a deadly weapon unless, in the manner it is used, it is capable of producing death or serious bodily injury. And here, the extent of the victim's actual injuries, again, is relevant to whether Mr. Nutter used his fist in a manner capable of producing serious bodily injury.
So I take it, Ms. Funes, that your argument would be that the degree of upset that the victim exhibited at the time the police arrived, her crying, her emotional state, could be explained by her fear of her husband finding out that she was there, as opposed to some manifestation of fear of injury.
It could be, and the victim was also highly intoxicated at the time. She testified that she was highly intoxicated, and the officer who reported testified that she noted some signs of intoxication in the alleged victim. So I do think sometimes intoxicated people tend to be more emotional than they would be otherwise. And along the same lines, I was going to talk about how the evidence in this case was not overwhelming just on the assault in general. Because the alleged victim later recanted her allegations and said that she injured herself by falling against the bed. She testified that Mr. Nutter would never hurt her. And there were apparently no other witnesses, despite the fact that when the police arrived, there was a third party in the room. That party was never called to testify, so we don't know what he saw. And then there were no admissions or incriminating statements made by Mr. Nutter either. So in this case, really, the evidence was not overwhelming, and the doctor's testimony about the serious bodily injury was critical to all three counts, and therefore reversal is required on all three convictions. I'm going to reserve the remaining of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Rebecca Williams, attorney registration number 43172. I'll also focus on the first issue in response to the defense counsel's arguments about the victim's medical records. The people argue that the victim's medical records in this case were actually privileged, and that this privilege was not abrogated by the duty to report statute. The statute only says the physician may be examined as a witness, not that the victim's medical records generally become discoverable just because the prosecution charged the defendant with an assault causing serious bodily injury.
Isn't the physician in a case like this duty-bound to disclose it? It's not only not privileged, he has a reporting requirement under the statute.
And he has a reporting requirement to report to police that he believes an injury was caused by. I mean, I think the reporting requirement is easily satisfied by the serious bodily injury form. And the reporting requirement also contemplates more of an instance where a victim would come in, you know, with injuries that were, you know, due to a crime, or in this instance, due to a domestic violence situation, not a situation where the police have called the ambulance to come assess the victim. Though I understand what your argument is, I think it's more than taken care of by the serious bodily injury form. And generally here we're talking about, you know, any victim of a crime. They didn't specify what medical records they were even seeking here before the trial court, other than just generally the victim's medical records. I think all the information that the prosecution sought to admit, medical testimony at least, was contained within the serious bodily injury form.
But that doesn't allow for the opportunity of defendant to conduct his own investigation and hire his own expert if he needs to rebut what the prosecution witness says, correct?
I understand your argument there, and I would disagree. I think to Judge Graham's point or earlier question of defense counsel, I think that the victim or the defense here had an ample opportunity to question any of the doctor's conclusion about a fracture, even though they didn't have access to the x-rays generally, but they had the opportunity to cross-examine them, which they just absolutely didn't do. You know, you had the photos, which, you know, I would argue were consistent with somebody, a fracture, a location of somebody who was punched in the left jaw, left lower eye, having a fracture in it. But that was, you know, left to the finder of fact. I think that there was an opportunity for them to question the conclusions and to place reasonable doubt in the jury's mind, and they failed to do that. That really didn't even seem to be the theory of the defendant's case at that time. I think that my argument mostly hinges on the fact that even if it was, the privilege was abrogated by the physician's duty to report in this instance, it's simply not an issue of discovery. The prosecution didn't have the records in its possession or control and had no responsibility to get the records where the victim refused to consent to this disclosure.
Isn't that circular? Because if the privilege is waived, then they had no obligation to get a waiver from the victim.
I think when you're dealing with a privilege, that's something that if defense counsel or the defendant wants access to the general way of obtaining those records is to subpoena the doctor or the hospital or the treating physician in this case for those records. And then that would be litigated before the trial court, and the trial court would determine whether or not there was a privilege. And they failed to do that in any event in this case. So that's my distinction between a discovery issue and then just defendant's failure to obtain these records. All parties agreed that they were privileged to begin with. And then the prosecution had sought to obtain them, couldn't find the victim, and the victim refused to consent to disclosure of the records. So all parties were on the same page until the trial court read Covington and still didn't determine that the victim's medical records were discoverable, but that the doctor could testify to his observations.
How do you distinguish Covington, where they had actual photographs taken as part of the examination but were beyond just the doctor's observations?
I think Covington is really a completely different issue for a lot of reasons than this case. There you first of all had specific photographs that you were talking about, and it wasn't an issue of discovery. Again, it was an issue of items that were already in everybody's control as they were taken at the request of police officers. And it was whether or not they were admissible for the jurors to review. I think it's just, in general, it's dealing with a completely different set of issues. We don't have, you know, the victim's privacy in her own records, the defendant being able to just pore over the records. I mean, I hate to say a fishing expedition, but asking for the medical records generally is much different from having photographs in the prosecution and defense counsel's possession and determining whether or not they're going to be admissible before the jury.
Ms. Williams, one aspect of this case that I find a bit troubling is the fact that the court here concluded that there was no problem with the discovery because both parties, the prosecutor and the defendant, were on the same footing.
I think...
How can that be when the prosecutor has an expert who has x-rays that he's prepared to give testimony about, and the defendant has nothing?
The defendant has, or first of all, I would just dispute, and I believe defense counsel mentioned this, in this case, the doctor wasn't testifying as an expert. He was essentially testifying for the admissibility of the serious bodily injury form to be admitted before the jury. His testimony was definitely limited to that. He was never endorsed or qualified as an expert.
Well, he...
I apologize.
But we have a doctor on the stand.
Right.
And a jury is going to believe that the doctor says this is a serious injury, wouldn't you agree? Because he's a physician.
Right, and because he's examined and saw a fracture just constitutes a serious
injury. Exactly, and he's seen the x-rays.
Correct. I'm sorry, I don't know that I answered your question. I sort of got off track.
Well, my question was, and I think we've reached an agreement of sort, is that the parties really weren't on the same footing.
I would argue that any fault of the parties not being on the same footing lies with the defendant, because it was the defendant's duty to subpoena these records in this case. Anytime there's an issue of privilege and then a misunderstanding of privilege, that's something that needs to be subpoenaed by the party seeking that record and then litigated in front of the trial court for the trial court to determine if in this specific instance the privilege applies. The defendant didn't do that in this case. It was never before the trial court unless the trial court had even, you know, read Covington and sort of raised the issue. And even then, defense counsel didn't request a continuance for the opportunity to subpoena the records or really address that in any way. And if defense counsel had actually believed that the record may have shown that the fracture was old or that the fracture was inconsistent with a punch to the left jaw, the visible injuries in the photographs, and that was a matter right for cross-examination and could have effectively been done, you know, in that situation.
But nobody asked it then. What if they cross-examine the doctor and the nurse says, oh, you're right, I must have misread the x-ray? There's nothing to contest them with. They have nothing to go back with.
That the prosecution, the prosecution would have nothing to go back with.
The defense has nothing to go back if the physician just corrects himself and says, I must have misnoted this on the SBI form.
It was on the left side, okay, right.
I mean, they have no way to contest it.
Right. I think it definitely goes to prejudice preservation and the issue of just, you know, the defendant not really having this theory to begin with, that the injury was old or anything else, that they failed to cross-examine on that, though, or failed to raise any sort of issue. You know, defense counsel noted that the trial counsel mentioned that was the theory of the case, is that the injury could have been older, could have been caused by the husband. And that was briefly potentially mentioned in closing argument. It was more of a statement of here and then here, and you could imagine that they were pointing at the photographs or the injuries in the photographs, and were able to make that argument. It's not entirely clear from the record in closing argument. But they failed to cross-examine the doctor about it, you know, intentionally or unintentionally. It was a trial strategy. I think that the real issue here, though, is that it was the defendant's duty to subpoena these records, not a discovery violation. And what the defendant's requesting here is a discovery, is a sanction for a discovery violation, which I just don't believe is what we have. I don't think it's the prosecution's duty, and that's what they were asking, is to prohibit the doctor from testifying, or that the trial court should have instituted a discovery violation.
Ms. Williams, assuming for purposes of my question only that we disagree with you, we think that reversal is necessary, what remedy are you asking for in that event? Would you be asking for a conviction on third degree assault, or would you want a retrial?
I think that it would just negate the element. It's only relevant to the elements of serious bodily injury. So I think that menacing is intact. I think the threat of serious bodily injury, for menacing conviction to be overturned, I think you would have to believe that the jury could have possibly determined that the punches that were thrown in this instance, and here the jury didn't just have these photographs of the cleaned up victim, there are photographs, the complete record shows photographs of blood all over the hotel room, blood all over the victim's clothing, that wasn't capable of producing serious bodily injury, which is required for menacing, put them in fear of the serious bodily injury count. And I think, you know, I'm not sure that I should speak to what, if we'd like it to be third-degree assault or remanded for
Well, you assume you'd be given the choice.
Right.
Which is the way it would usually work if we determined that we had to reverse on the second-degree serious bodily injuries.
Right. The trial court would be given the choice, or that the
prosecution would be given the choice? No, the prosecution would be given the choice. Sounds like you're not ready to make that choice.
I'm not exactly ready to make that choice. I apologize.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
That's okay. If the court has no further questions, I would ask that you would affirm the second-degree assault conviction in this case. Thank you.
Okay, I have 4 points that I'd like to respond to just briefly. The first is the state's allegation that the defense had an obligation to subpoena these records. The rules of discovery are very clear that the state is required to disclose to the defense any reports or statements of expert witnesses and any physical examinations and scientific tests. And that is a mandatory disclosure requirement. So if these records were not privileged, they are subject to discovery, and there is no obligation on behalf of the defense to subpoena those records. And I also dispute the state's argument that these records were not privileged. I believe Covington is controlling this case. It is a Supreme Court case. It does involve photographs of a victim's injuries, and arguably the CAT scan in this case is a photograph of the victim's injury in this case. And Covington, although it discusses a doctor's testimony is not privileged when it involves doctor's observations, it also talks about the photograph in that case and the underlying records that memorialize the doctor's observations. And so I believe Covington is controlling and holds that these records are not privileged and should have been discovered. And I do want to also address the state's argument that Covington only involved admissibility of the records. Covington holds that the records were not privileged, and then there is a case that I cited in the opening brief. I can't find it right now. Hang on. It's People v. Lenari, and that's also a Supreme Court case, and that was the case that said that non-privileged information is subject to disclosure under the discovery rules. The third argument that I wanted to address was the state's argument that this state did not have an obligation to turn over the information because they didn't have access to it. And as Judge Dunn has pointed out, the state did have access because the records were not privileged. And in fact, they had a duty to use diligent good faith efforts to obtain those records. This duty extends not only to records that they have in their own possession, but also to records that are in possession of anyone who has participated in evaluation of the case and reported to the district attorney's office with reference to this particular case. And in this case, I would argue that the doctor did participate in the evaluation of the case when he evaluated the victim's injuries and did report to the district attorney's office with reference to the case by filling out the serious bodily injury form and then testifying for the prosecution in this case. And then the final argument I wanted to address was this court's question about the remedy. I do believe that reversal would be required, not just entry of judgment on the third-degree assault, and that is because this serious bodily injury determination, I believe, affects the jury's credibility determination and their overall evaluation of the evidence and whether the victim was credible in stating that to the police that the defendant had assaulted her in the first place. And so, in conclusion, I would just ask this court to reverse on all counts.
Thank you. We will get you ready to continue in due course. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this afternoon. As soon as